Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everyone. I hope you had a great Christmas. We sure did. You got all the gifts you wanted, and so did your children. This is the Chuck and Julie Show, True Straight Up. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, brought to you by...
By AmericaCitizenPress.com and Dr. Julie McCallum with Denver Centigenics. And thank you to Mark Griffith and Mark Poff for filling in for us. They always do a great job. They do a great job, and we like took a little bit of time off a little long time ago. As a working mom, that it just makes everything a little smooth. If you can take a couple of days off just to get all the last minute shopping, of which there always is. But anyway, yeah, we had a great Christmas. Rev got...
Show everybody your...
check out me, a bracelet to match my other bracelet. There we go.
That he gave to you.
That he gave to me. Rev got an Oculus Quest. I have to say, it's like a... Facebook is evil. I acknowledge that, but they do make a heck of a little video game thing. It's a VR kind of thing, virtual reality. It's 3D. It's very cool. I can't play in it for much more than 5 minutes before feeling like we're going to throw up.
It was the same thing, motion sickness.
Yeah,
exact same where your body is telling you one thing and your eyes and everything else will tell you something else.
Yeah, and nor can I work the controls. But it is pretty cool, though. It is pretty cool. We've got a lot to talk about today, but want to start off with a story that's kind of making news today. And our good friend, defense attorney Maureen O'Brien, joins us today. Hey, Maureen, thank you for your time.
Hi, Julie and Chuck.
Hi.
Hi there. So I'm sure you guys have seen this story. There was the truck driver on I-70 who crashed into and killed four people in April of 2019. There was a trial. He was convicted on four counts, I think, of vehicular homicide, first degree assault, a variety of reckless and reckless driving, careless driving, things like that. And then was sentenced. It was a mandatory sentence to 110 years in jail, in prison. And then the social media world and even the judge said, hey, I wish I didn't have to do this. It was mandatory sentencing. But Maureen, thank God for progressive Soros-backed DA Alexis King, who today went to the judge and said, oh my God, that's a horrible sentence. I think you should reconsider it. You were one of the first persons to catch the hypocrisy of that. So I'm just going to let you explain. Go ahead.
Well, Alexis King took office in January, so she was not the one who actually filed these charges. It was her predecessor, Pete Weir, was the elected DA that filed these charges, but she certainly had the ability to change these charges, and she is the person whose administration proceeded to trial on these charges, knowing full well that these are mandatory sentences and that this was going to be the result if he got convicted on everything they were asking the jury to convict them on. I will note, I think there were 42 charges, and he only got convicted of, I think it was 29 or so. So
right.
Theoretically, her office actually wanted him to be convicted of more things.
It's like, and so then the kind of social media, and then the judge says, hey, I wish I didn't have to do that. And after kind of, I don't know, reading her Twitter feed, she announces, oh my God, I will personally handle this. And by asking the judge today to reconsider, so there's going to be a reconsideration hearing where she's going to ask for 20 to 30 years. But, I guess, Maureen, again, you just hit it. It's like the hypocrisy of causing the problem in the first place and injustice.
Right.
Acknowledging
exactly.
That it's an injustice and now trying to take credit for solving it when she could have...
That's the arsonist putting out the fire.
Right, exactly.
Well, and there's not even... I listened to the hearing today, which everyone kept saying was a resentencing. I knew it couldn't possibly be a resentencing today. So today was just a scheduling conference, and I listened to it, and the judge said he could not even find a procedural mechanism to allow the DA to file what she did file. Because DAs aren't supposed to be doing that. It's the defense that files the reconsideration, and a judge also can do it on their own. But there's no mechanism, and he could find no precedent for the DA to ever file one themselves.
Well, wow. Did he scold her?
Did he
find her? He didn't scold her, but he did say he couldn't find any precedent for that.
Well, then they shouldn't allow
And again, it. Because the mechanism for that is if you don't think the person should be sentenced to whatever
don't,
the sentence
file
is,
right? Don't file it. Don't trial on it.
Because can you explain that a little bit for folks who may not be familiar? What? Because most cases I've covered, there is some discretion, but it does all depend on how they charge it. So can you explain to folks why this case resulted in the mandatory sentencing that it did?
Okay, well, first of all, when you get arrested for something, the police, normally how it works, the police will arrest you for something and say, here's what we think he should be charged with, DA. And then the DA decides what actual charges they want to file that they think they can prove beyond a reasonable doubt at trial. So that's what got filed against him by the predecessor DA. But very often, charges get changed and filed ongoing during the case, including up to and including the day of trial. We recently had a big trial, and right before the trial, they dismissed some of the very serious charges against our client, even though, you know, you'd gone this whole time having those charges. So they could have easily done that before this trial. They could have dismissed any of the charges that they didn't think were appropriate. There are certain offenses in this state that automatically carry a mandatory sentence, which means the judge has no discretion. There's a range of sentencing time periods that you have to go to DOC, Department of Corrections Prison. And in this case, there were many counts like that, and because they were filed as crimes of violence, they were required to be served consecutively, which means one after the other, as opposed to concurrently, which means at the same time. So sometimes you have two counts, and either they merge, and so maybe you're convicted of both things, but when they merge, you only serve a certain period of time because they merged. But these, because they're charged as crimes of violence, have to be served consecutively, and that's why it ended up being 110 years. And the DAs all know this. This is not a big shock to them.
Right. And let's explore this exactly. Let's explore this a little bit because crimes, I mean, so you're saying if she had not charged him, say she said, well, I just need justice for the family, so I'm going to file all these charges. But the crime of violence, I mean, there was no violent. I mean, it was bad and it was horrible. But crimes of violence, I mean, in my experience covering it,
violence.
Well, it's like, yeah, if you shoot, if you've got a gun or something like that.
It's not necessarily that. I mean, they're statutory. Okay. What is designated as a crime of violence is by statute. But you don't have to file those charges. They could have filed vehicular homicide, which is not a mandatory sentence.
I
believe that's true. It's not a mandatory sentence. And so the reckless or negligent behavior, because I think everyone agreed this wasn't an intentional act on his part. He didn't set out saying, I'm going to cause this accident and kill these people. But it was either reckless or negligent or both, and I think he got convicted of both types of crime. But, you know, some of those, like first-degree assault, can be reckless or negligent and can be a crime of violence. And the way he was charged, it was.
Just to show you, which is why the system is so broken, the prosecutors award themselves little trophies with gears on them. Which is anathema to a system in which a prosecutor is supposed to do justice. Just justice, not giving out prizes to themselves and patting each other back for getting... It just shows you how far the system has gone. I mean, I must admit, I've given up on the system. The system cannot work. I watched it go from, you know, a fairly balanced system back in the 70s and 80s, sort of, kind of. And then the Bidens and the Clintons and every other local state decided that, you know, we've got to have mandatory sentencing. We've got to have three strikes, you're out. All of a sudden, we started incarcerating an enormous number of people in this country. We had the highest incarceration rate in the world. But instead of stepping that back, you know, we also took all the discretion away from judges and gave it all to prosecutors. It didn't get to be any more fair that now prosecutors had all the discretion and the judges had none. It increased incarceration rates. But now we've gone the other way. So all of a sudden you have Soros prosecutors who are really destroying entire cities. I mean, we've gone from one extreme to the other extreme without passing go. without passing.
The judge today actually said he wanted them to brief this issue, both the defense and the prosecution, but he said his reading was that he had no discretion originally when he made the sentence, but that on this reconsideration, his reading of the statute says that he has complete discretion now to do whatever he wants, and he found that troubling, that it would be such a discrepancy.
Right,
between no discretion and now complete discretion for the same exact case.
It could really literally go from 110 years to no. Well, let me ask you this, because Maureen, we talk about this kind of thing all the time with you. And just Maureen is with O'Brien, Bibbick, and Thomas. And I'm just going to say this. This is the best criminal defense team, I mean, in the universe,
I know Fred, Maureen, particularly Fred, just finished off a gun shooting in a car. I don't know if it was Vicky Hickett or not, but they won all counts but one. They were deadlocked, and then so they quickly retried the one, not seeing them, and they won that one. So it's pretty
these impressive. Guys win. So I'm just saying that, just giving you a plug there, Maureen. But one of the things, but you guys are in the courtroom, I mean, probably like literally every day, and we've talked about this before, and this case ended up getting a lot of national attention, Kim Kardashian, things like that. But the kind of things that happened to this defendant, I mean, this isn't unusual. I mean, you flat out, Seth, said to me, this happens every day in courtrooms in Colorado.
Where people are overcharged or charged with things that are mandatory sentences. Well, for example, the trial that Chuck was just talking about, Fred just won, our client who was road raged, he had ended up pulling out his gun because he thought the other guy was going to attack him, and it accidentally went off and went through his own windshield. Well, he got charged with attempted murder. This is a 65-year-old guy who had never been in trouble in his life, nicest guy in the world. And the attempted murder carried a mandatory sentence of 16 to 48 years in prison. And so you have to decide at that point, are you going to fight these charges and risk going to prison for that long, which would be a life sentence for him, or are you going to just cave in and take whatever offer they give you, which, you know, that's completely in the DA's discretion, too, whatever offer they're going to give you. And their offer to him was a felony, and he didn't think he committed a felony, so we went to trial, and we won.
But, you know, and I think that's sort of the crux of it. The prosecutors have, I mean, they're probably the most powerful people in Colorado when you get right down to it, in terms of where, because, for instance, and I'm going to ask about this, George Brockley, who I find myself disagreeing with more and more these days, said, well, the guy could have taken a plea bargain. But that's exactly what you're saying. The DAs, it's like they use it to strong arm you into taking a plea. They know the original charges are completely unreasonable, but like you said, it's such a risk that it's going to be tricky for you guys to figure out what to do.
It's horrible. That's the worst kind of case, is knowing your client's going to go to prison if you lose, even if you think they're innocent. It's horrible.
Well, George, and I also really like George, but he made an appearance. I'm not sure if you saw it on CNN, Maureen.
I missed it.
Yeah, well, it's going around the conservative legal circles. Which he made a sort of an ass of himself. He had no empathy to a guy who got 110 years because he didn't take the plea bargain. So according to George, the world according to George is that if you don't take a prosecutor's plea bargain, then it doesn't matter what happens to you. It doesn't matter how huge an injustice it is. It just doesn't matter anymore. You either take
the plea bargain. Because you're exercising your right to go to trial.
Well, and that's a Sixth Amendment right. And when the host for CNN, and I hate hosts for CNN, but brought that up, isn't that a Sixth Amendment right? And George went, no, not really. You know, we take all our amendments and they're modifiable. I mean, he's just kind of like, right to trial, screw that. The only injustice he saw in the system was their term limits for prosecutors. That was the only injustice he saw in the system.
Because he didn't want to be term limited.
Yeah, he didn't want to be term limited, right? He got term limited, and he thought that was the greatest injustice of all time. And it really points out, and I had a federal judge, and I've told the story before, he thought it took about 2 to 3 years for federal judges to become too tied up in their own power and losing a lot of their humanitas. And he thought prosecutors, who back then didn't have quite as much power as they do today, it took 4 or 5 years. Well, George shouldn't be a prosecutor anymore. When he doesn't believe in justice, when he doesn't believe in the Constitution, when he doesn't care what happens to human beings in this world, then you're unfit to be a prosecutor. And he's unfit to be a prosecutor. And yet he's one of the more reasonable ones. He's one of the ones that Oh, you didn't think was quite so awful. Maybe you did, but I didn't.
Go ahead, Maureen.
He didn't have that reputation that you're thinking of. He had a reputation as being pretty harsh.
He got pretty harsh because he's a JAG judge. So can you imagine him being a JAG judge? You wouldn't want him sitting for your case either. But here's the problem. Prosecutors have given absolute immunity, which is a real mistake. It's the biggest mistake, where they can do anything, even intentionally wrong, and they can't be held liable to it. And just look at the Duke lacrosse case. That prosecutor, whose favorite book was Kill a Mockingbird, which is interesting, he eventually spent a day in jail and got disbarred. Look at Angela Corey down in Florida for the Zimmerman trial, where she did every dirty trick she could do. You got the Zimmerman case. You got the Kyle Rittenhouse case, where the prosecutor is putting on what he knows is perjured testimony. Defense attorney said, you know, when I was a prosecutor, I did not put on perjured testimony that I knew was perjured, even if it would help me. But the prosecutor there had no problem. So time and time again, we show prosecutors are the worst. Not the best.
Well, it's frightening.
Worst. Yeah.
It's frightening. I mean, you go all the way back in Colorado to the Tim Masters case.
Yes. That's right.
I mean, that was just a horrific miscarriage. They eventually charged the cop with perjury. I mean,
it's gone on
for years.
Yeah, two people who were the prosecutors became judges did get voted out.
And here's another thing, too. Again, we're talking about just the power of prosecutors, which I think, as this case shows, should be reined in. And Sandra, just to address one of the comments, Sandra, the district attorney is not changing their sentencing request because of what the family had to say. They talked long with the family about that months and months ago. She's simply changing it because it looks bad PR-wise, and she wants to take the credit when she's the one who could have fixed it in the beginning. But then you look at some of these other cases, just for instance, the Colorado Sun, I think, did a good job on the hundreds of people who were arrested during the George Floyd Antifa protests. Most of those charges have been dropped. And yet you go to Washington, D.C., where the people at the Capitol on January 6th have been held without bond in jail for what essentially are misdemeanors. I mean, so Maureen, I can't emphasize this enough. You see this every day, not just at the cases that the media, the rest of us never hear about.
Right. You wouldn't have probably heard about this case. For instance, say he got 30 years in jail. Do you think this case would have ever been so big? It wouldn't have been. It's only because it was 110 years. But these kind of cases go on constantly where people get 20, 30 years in prison because they didn't take a plea bargain and they exercised their right to trial. And, you know, it's really very difficult when they have these mandatory sentences.
Yeah, well, that's the legislature, which was, you know, people thought that the judges were too liberal and gave out too many light sentences. And so they turned it into an incarceration state. And we've gone from an incarceration state to the George Gascon and all these other prosecutors, including Alexis King. And there you're going to get awful treatment for the victims of crimes. I mean, it's just, the whole system stinks, and I don't think it's ever going to be corrected. I don't think it'll ever be corrected.
I'm not sure how it can be corrected, but it certainly is really, really difficult. And people don't realize, I have people constantly, my clients say to me, I had no idea the system was like this until they get involved in it.
Yes.
Right. I mean, because I know you have other stuff to do, so we'll let you go here in a couple of minutes. But, I mean, what do you see as possible fixes?
Well, I would do away with mandatory sentencing, number one. I think it's just really wrong. It gives the DAs too much power. It takes all the power away from the judges, which, you know, the judges are elected, too.
Right.
And they're retained. They're either retained or not, but it's all in the hands of the voters after the first time.
Sort of, kind of.
That can be rectified if you have a really bad judge.
Not often.
Certainly the elected DA is elected, but not everybody that works for that person is elected.
Yeah.
And most of them are not, and a lot of them don't have good judgment. Frankly, they get out of law school, and they give them these positions of power, and they are wanting to exercise it.
Yes.
Right. Well, and there's no accountability. I mean, when you look at it, but Chuck referenced at the beginning, and I don't know if people are aware of this. So this case, some of the testimony involved were the brakes bad, were the brakes broken. And so the brake discs and things like that were introduced as evidence. And one of the prosecutors gave the other prosecutor like a brake disc mounted like in a frame, like a congratulatory thing. And then that prosecutor posted, "What a great gift," on Facebook. It's like,
sick.
That was really bad taste.
I mean, you've got four people dead, others injured, one guy whose life is, and to you, it's like a little party thing. I mean, and you know, and these guys, well, they're trying cases, you know, as we speak, I'm sure.
The only chance you would have is, and you couldn't trust the state to do this because you can't trust the state to do anything. But there used to be times when the state would put together commissions. And they kind of go, okay, mm-hmm. You know, we gave judges too much discretion. Now we give them too little. We had mandatory max prosecutors, and now we have prosecutors who don't even want bail. We've got to find something that we address all these together: the sentencing laws from the legislature, the lack of judgment on prosecutors, and the total distrust of the system by anybody who's been involved with it. But then again,
one thing that I think helps, frankly, is during the pandemic, we all got used to doing a lot of the court stuff on the computer, on WebEx, which is completely open to the public generally. Now, judges generally don't like it,
no.
And a lot of them won't put their trials on WebEx. But if they would, I'll put them on there, and people would be able to see what goes on all the time. I think it would be great.
Yeah, I agree.
Shine a light on it. Well, let me, a final question, then what you go. It's got to be, given how things are so wacky, right, that it, depending on, you know, your politics, you may have your charges totally dropped, or you may end up in jail for 110 years. That's got to be a nightmare for defense attorneys to try to figure out how to advise their client. I mean, it seems like it's completely capricious and arbitrary anymore.
It is, and it's very hard to advise your clients, especially on these mandatory sentences where you think your client's actually innocent.
Right.
Because, you know, they've got a choice between taking that risk of if they're convicted, the judge has no discretion but to send them to prison, even if the judge thought they were innocent.
Yeah.
You know, it's very difficult to advise them.
All right. Well, maybe, Maureen, we'll get you back on because this is just an important topic that's, I'm sure we'll have you on again.
It's an interesting topic. Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is. And thank you for your time today. Like I said, I know you've got stuff to get to, so we appreciate you taking time out for us this afternoon.
Sure. All right. Thank you. Have a nice day, you guys.
Thanks, you too. And so for Sandra, anybody who came in late, her name is Maureen O'Brien. She's been a friend of mine for years, a great defense attorney with O'Brien, Bibick, and Thomas. I can't say enough about her. But I think, again, you know, when she and I were talking about this case with the truck driver, she says, Julie, this happens every day. She said, people just don't hear about it.
The system is set up because it cannot have everything to go to trial.
Right.
That they have draconian charges filed to force people to plea, but it's really gotten out of hand. So here, 110 years, or you go to trial. I mean, it's just, the system stinks. I mean,
well,
it just
and as
stinks.
Maureen said, they had
and those involved in it. Stinks.
And they don't drop the charges until like the day before trial, right?
Yes.
So in the meantime, yes. If you're the defendant, you've had to pay your defense attorney to prepare for all of that. In the meantime, what if you like take the plea bargain and then they were going to drop it anyway? The whole thing is completely unfair. Oh, Maureen, she's got off the phone. I was going to tell everybody liked her. Mm-hmm. She's an incredible defense attorney. She's really educated me over the years as to the issues and some of the problems. And what we'll have, there's so many things, but it's wrong when you, to me, I think you consider the fact that most people who end up caught up in the criminal justice system because of things they did, and Maureen always says this, they're not bad people.
Oh, there are lots of bad people.
Well, there are some bad people, but
there are plenty of bad people get caught up in the criminal justice system, but there are also increasing numbers of people who are not bad, and it's the same awful system no matter who you're part of.
Right, right.
And there are career criminals that are just out there.
And again, don't let this DA fool you, okay? The DA is the one who could have changed any of this.
She's a piece of crap.
She is. She could have changed it.
But so you got Alexis King.
Until that social media went crazy.
Yeah, we have Alexis King on one hand and you have George Brockler on the other. And there's not much difference.
And it's like, depending on what jurisdiction you're arrested in, it's the whole thing, you know, really should it, you know, again, if you're a defense attorney, what do you do here? And this is from, they're talking about the truck driver. He was trained in Texas. How many, you know, Jacob and Maureen talked about that when we were talking on the phone. She said, it's clear from listening to the testimony that there are issues with the truck driver. And that she said she was not surprised or shocked by the reckless driving, careless driving kind of thing. But what she said is, you know, and vehicular homicide, right? But first degree assault. And again, the fact that it was charged as a crime of violence, which has, I mean, it was an accident, right? It's not what you would think of. That's the kind of thing that the prosecutor deliberately threw in there to force the mandatory sentences.
Yeah.
They didn't have to charge this tragic vehicular homicide as a crime of violence, but they did, and that was that. So we'll be sticking that. Want to switch over to some more funny stuff, though.
Funny stuff.
I'm sure that everybody heard the Let's Go Brandon, the latest Let's Go Brandon. You had that dad calling into NORAD. Sort of completely, he said, unexpectedly got put on the phone with Joe Biden and Jill Biden. And then he said, you know, all of a sudden I realized this is my opportunity to express my displeasure with how things are going. So we said, let's go, Brandon. Now that was funny enough, but then our completely clueless president said, I agree. Let's go, Brandon. And it's like, have no idea, you know, that I don't know how he could be so unaware. But of course, the liberal media melts down. They're calling it a right wing slur. You know, you could say F Trump all over the place, but, you know, that's OK. But this is somehow it's white supremacists, I'm sure, you know. But the guy was on Steve Bannon's War Room today. And what I really liked about it, because he said he's received threats, everybody's attacking him all over the place. Right. He didn't back down. Not one inch. If we could, Thomas, please play the Let's Go Brandon guy. This is Jared Schmeck with Steve Bannon today.
But Let's Go Brandon is more than just F Joe Biden. Let's Go Brandon encompasses the entirety of our frustration with Joe Biden, the administration, the leftist mob, the cancel culture, the mainstream media. They're the ones who made this a thing. And we're able, as conservatives, we're able to find humor in this. But there's terrible things going on. We've got the debacle in Afghanistan. I mean, they're not even talking about that anymore. It's crazy to me how quickly they forgot that story, and no one's talking about it. And there's still people trapped over there. We've got the supply chain issues. We've got the inflation rates. We've got terrible policies on abortion. I'm a very pro-life person, absolutely terrible policies on abortion. The border crisis, the federal mandates regarding vaccines. I mean, it just there's more than I could even say in a day.
Say in a day. Say more than I could say a day. Hey, and we're going to open it up, too, if you want to call in or comment. 888-627-6008 is the call-in number. 888-627-6008. If you're with us on Zoom, go ahead and you can raise your hand or just unmute yourself, and we can talk to you about that if you want to weigh in. But I mean,
The guy I feel sorry for is the driver whose name is Brandon, who was interviewed after winning the race,
driver.
The NASCAR driver. He has come out and said he can't get any sponsorships anymore. And he says he understands why. If Coca-Cola, if it's going to be he Coca-Cola received all this criticism, although he had nothing to do other than it's his name the woman used. But the poor guy said, I can't get a job anymore.
And that's going to be the stupid reporter. Remember how this all started? Around the country, spontaneous cheers were erupting at football games and things like that with young people, not Trump supporters initially, you know, F Joe Biden. And then the reporter was an NBC reporter interviewing the NASCAR guy named Brandon after he won a race. And the fans started chanting in the back, F Joe Biden, F Joe Biden, which you could clearly hear. And the reporter tried to gaslight us all, just tried to lie to us and said, oh, how cute. They're saying, let's go, Brandon. Well,
thereby ending his racing career.
And it's the liberal crazy media that launched the whole, you know, let's go Brandon in the first place. And now all of a sudden they're trying to say, if you say it, it's some kind of white supremacist, right-wing slur attack. But I love that guy because he's absolutely right. Because here's the thing, and that's why it's caught on so much, is that people are upset with Joe Biden. And the polls show it. What, he had a 36%
in Sipkos,
Yeah.
And what's interesting, if you look, they also have one for Dunafin, not Dunafin, what am I talking about, for Trump. And Trump's rating is around 40 and Biden's 36. Well, Trump lost Colorado by 14 points. So that's an 18-point shift, although who knows with ballot harvesting what will happen.
But I mean, that kid was, the kid, the dad was great. Hey, we got Karen Cataline with us. Hey, Karen. Thank you for joining.
Hey, both of you.
Hey, happy holidays, happy new year, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you, et cetera, to both of you. Sorry to go back to the more serious subject that you started on. Great, first half hour. I love the humor of the story you were just talking about, but I just wanted to comment. My husband and I, as you know, we've been watching this trucker case for a very long time. Matter of fact, my husband almost was called, I mean, had been in talks with the DA. He won't be now, to be an expert witness because he trains CDL drivers. And I wouldn't know any of this if I weren't married to a truck driver who trains CDL drivers. And it may seem off the subject, but it's been an example of people who make all kinds of decisions based on their own personal knowledge of stuff, but they have no idea of what they're talking about. I thought the points that you made about the courts were absolutely right on. 110 years, even for people who think you should get time, was ridiculous.
Right.
But people make the assumption that brakes going out on a truck, on an 18-wheeler, is the same as what happens on a truck. If you ride the brakes at 80 miles an hour going down a hill, you won't have brakes. And for them to continue to push the idea that the brakes were faulty, well, I only know this because of Scott, and that's untrue almost 99% of the time from an unskilled driver who's going way too fast, who didn't know how to drive the mountains, et cetera, et cetera. So that was used as part of it. The other two points I would just throw out, and I know you, anyway, are that the other two points I'd throw out is that, one, think about this and the public outrage. And 110 years is ridiculous, but will the public get outraged at the Kim Potter verdict?
Right.
Who chose, you know, who pulled the wrong weapon. And there was no malice whatsoever. It was a terrible tragedy, but they're going to want to throw the book at her because it's politically expedient.
I agree, and I think those two cases are very similar. They're manslaughter cases, basically. She didn't intend to kill the man, and neither did the truck driver intend to kill anybody. The truck driver was negligent. He didn't take the off ranks. He's riding the brakes, etc. He deserves a jail sentence. As far as I'm concerned, Kim Potter deserves a jail sentence. If you're out there pulling guns, talking to people, it's a degree of negligence that you end up just killing somebody. But it's not murder, but it is manslaughter, and she deserves jail time. She deserves 40 years or 50 years or no. She deserves something in line with manslaughter, which is, you know, 5 to 10 years, at least in my mind.
I think what all of these cases keep bringing out are the things that liberals and leftists and progressives don't want us to say, which is that every case must be adjudicated based on the facts and individual circumstances. And they keep making these one-size-fits-all broad-brush rules because everything to them is politics.
And no, and that, Karen, and that it is politics. And let's go back to all of a sudden. So the judge says that he did not believe that he wished that he did not have to do this 110 years, that would not have been what he did. And I know I've been reading the chat comments there, and without getting into all the technical things, but what Karen and you said is absolutely right, that the driver's claim that his brakes suddenly went out and there was nothing he could do has been shown to be not accurate. And I remember when this case first came up, Barney, who drives trucks, called in and said, you know, you don't drive in the mountains unless you know how to, right? So the very fact that he was there without knowing how to drive in the mountains, and he said, and any trucker knows this, right? And you ask yourself now, you know, he had a hyphenated Hispanic name. I don't know why, but for some reason, this case caught the attention. I mean, how many people get sentenced to lengthy, you know, prison terms every day and nobody cares, right? But this one, and that's a bizarreness of our system, because suddenly he catches fire and Kim Kardashian is weighing in. The progressive DA feels compelled to now go do something about it. And now you've got the poor judge, not poor judge, but the judge is like, there's going to be pressure on him to give the guy like no time. And then like you said,
I don't think there's a lot of pressure, but no time. I don't think anybody watched the trial, listened to the trial.
But my point is decisions are being made on social media with a bunch of people who have no idea what they're even talking about.
Social media never do know what they're talking about. It's an unfair
I think
world.
We agree. Although I will say this, and I am liking less and less people at your former station who are taking the easy way out, but it does make, you do have to make the point that all the crocodile tears that this guy was crying really was disingenuous. When not only did he want to get a speeding ticket, that's all he wanted, but he lied about the fact he wouldn't take an ounce of responsibility. That doesn't mean he deserves 110 years.
No. That's none of that is true. That is all Peter Boyle's bullshit. All Peter Boyle's bullshit. Yes, he got offered 20 to 30 year plea bargain and he didn't take it. Because he didn't think he should spend that amount of time in jail. He did no counter offer, I suppose, but it doesn't mean
I do believe
contrition.
He expressed remorse.
He had contrition.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just 710 Canuas bullshit. And goes along with George Brockler saying, if you don't take a plea deal, then you deserve your life in prison till you die. It's just
that
garbage.
Is ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
And again,
if you exercise your rights, you should not be penalized for exercising your rights.
No. Well, and that's a
no
thing.
Question.
And that was a point.
Well, that was Peter. Well, he didn't admit to anything. He didn't admit to take it. He never was given a sentence that he was willing to do, but they only offered 20 to 30 years.
Well, and that's
Then they turned that into Brockler's point. All he wanted was a speeding ticket. You know, garbage. It's just prosecutorial garbage.
Well, I got a confession to make on your show. I don't listen to Peter Boyles anymore.
I can't stand it.
Well, you know, and here's Mark Timon is saying Chuck is right. Yeah, the guy did express, I don't know, Karen, that I would call him crocodile tears. I'm sure the guy feels terrible. I'm sure, though, that anyone would feel terrible, right? And that you can feel terrible and say you're sorry and still have done, you know, he killed four people, right? So their families feel really, really terrible. And so, I mean, justice is a complicated thing. And that's, to me, why it's so important that you can't have prosecutors treating the case the way that the prosecutor in this case did, where number one, you so overcharge it, it only in an effort to force a person to plea bargain, whether that plea bargain has anything to is just or not either, right? You just want to chalk up another win. And then though, to have the whatever, to turn around and say, when everybody says, oh, that's not fair, to say, oh, I'll fix it now, and then try to be the hero. It seems to me nobody ever in this case sat down and said, you know, what would be the just, and I know this is me being Pollyanna.
Oh, they never do that.
Yeah, well, exactly.
How about,
what would be the just thing to do?
How about this for thinking a little bit upside down? What if some people, sometimes it gets decided that they're going to throw, and I know Chuck has seen this, ridiculous amount of charges. They throw the book at them to satisfy and pacify the families and the victims when they know darn well people are waiting in the wings to say, well, that's unjust. Let's let them go with time served.
Well,
I mean, a lot of people are positioning themselves.
They usually do it in order to force plea bargains.
Right.
They don't care all that much about
the victims. There is, I mean, I think theoretically you would end up, because of good time and things like that, the way the Department of Corrections figures your sentence, you usually end up serving, I think it's roughly the typical person, about a third of the sentence. Roughly between a third and a half. But I know, but it gets complicated. But again, I think to me, and I've come to, you know, Chuck, I've evolved to this too. Prosecutors, I think, have an incredible amount of power. We need to do something. Yes. To take some of that power back. And again, if you're a defense attorney, you know, say your person, you know, you've got a client who was a protester. Well, if they're in Washington, D.C., they've been sitting in jail for almost a full year now and essentially a misdemeanor charge.
And I promise you, they'll be facing massive mandatory.
But Beth McCann, if you're in Denver, she's let hundreds of them go, right? Yeah, right. I mean,
the motive, and that is, don't you Americans ever think for one minute of coming here to Washington and exercising your First Amendment rights, or this will happen to you. That's the message.
Yes. That's right. Yes. All right. Well, Karen, hey, thank you. Let me give you a chance to promo your show, because you've got one. You're on all the time anyway. What do you have going on?
Well, I don't know about that, but we are working on the potential of a new show. I can't talk about it yet. But I do a show. I know. We'll see what happens.
I'll call you afterwards. Okay.
I know. Well, I don't got anything yet, but Tuesday, okay. Thursday, Friday, come January, it'll all be, 11 a.m. Mountain, noon, Central, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. But the last thing I just have to say is, let's go, Brandon.
All right, Karen Cavalli, thank you. Anyone else wants to call 888-627-6008? Let's look at some of the questions on the chat. So this is from Steve. Kim Potter was don't the people who train, evaluate, and Kim Potter is the police officer who shot the guy. She thought she was pulling her taser and she actually pulled her gun and shot the guy. Don't the people who train, evaluate, and supervise police officers have a share of Kim's responsibility, for instance? And then he says, that was Jim, rather. And then Steve says, Jim, Kim was a training officer. She should have had the taser on the other side, so she didn't reach for the taser and grab the gun. From Kim Potter, this is also from Steve from the trial. What about the expert witness who testified deadly force was justified because he was trying to elude the police? I think it's...
She couldn't just go out to the window and blow his head off.
Yeah, it still wouldn't have been... I mean, that doesn't have anything to do with it. The problem I have with it, again, though, is... that yes, what she did was wrong, but she made a mistake, right? But let's look at it this year too. I recently had a friend whose husband, father of three children, went into the hospital here in Colorado for a routine procedure. They nicked his colon, and then in trying to fix that, did all kinds of other damage. And to make a long, tragic story short, he died completely unexpectedly two weeks before Christmas. Okay, now what about that doctor? Should that doctor face criminal charges? I mean, it's a tricky issue. I mean, but once you start... And I don't know what the answer is, but criminalizing people if you're a police officer in your job, unfortunately, if you make a mistake, if we make a mistake, you know, maybe somebody calls us and complains and kicks us off a radio station or something. but nobody dies, right? But when you have certain jobs where if you make a mistake, there can be life or death consequences, but then we criminalize the mistake, I think that just makes it.
I don't know how that could not be a criminal charge. Just blowing that person's head off when you thought you had a taser. I mean, anybody who's ever held a taser, it doesn't feel anything like a gun. And she just simply, I don't know what her problem was, but I think it was a manslaughter charge, which she should do some jail time, but should not be put in jail for the rest of her life.
And again, the whole thing comes down to rather than having anything to do with justice, it all has to do with the prosecutor, right? And the prosecutor that you get and what their particular political beliefs are, what their agenda is at the moment. From Sandra, filing a medical malpractice against a physician is really difficult because most physicians will not testify against them.
No, you'll get one for this one.
And basically they won't get referrals. But it is a tricky thing though. I mean, and again, you got to wonder in the Kim Potter case, if say 10 years ago, she would have been charged.
Probably not.
I mean, there's something else.
Also, it was on video, so.
Well, they, yeah, that makes a thing. Okay, switching. We can keep, if people want to keep commenting on that, we can go there. The other thing I wanted to talk about, though, is in case you didn't know, I know we all thought Joe Biden was going to solve COVID, but nope, it's actually what he said today was it's not even his problem. Not even his problem. It's the governor's problem. Now, here in Colorado, fortunately, the governor said it's not his problem either.
No,
it's the local people's problem.
And the local people said it's your problem.
And the local people said, yeah, it's your problem. So everyone stay home, get locked down and wear a mask. But Joe Biden held a news conference, not a news conference, because he doesn't do news conferences. He was talking to governors. And in talking to governors today, he basically said, we're not doing COVID anymore. And then he went to Delaware for a week vacation. But the Republican Party, you know, the National Republican Party, put together a little clip of him promising that he was going to solve it. So, Thomas, if we could play the shut down the virus video, please. Oh, there we go.
Say is I'm going to shut down the virus, not the country. I'm not going to shut down the country. I'm going to shut down the virus.
I'm going to shut down the virus.
I'm going to shut down the virus. I'll shut down the virus, not the economy.
Well, I'm going to shut down the virus.
Once we shut down the virus,
I'm going to shut down the virus.
I'm going to shut down the virus.
I'm not going to shut down the country, but I'm going to shut down the virus.
Woo. Oh, not anymore, though. Not anymore. He's not going to shut down the virus anymore. If we could please play, and this is quick, so just listen. If we could please play the Brandon Today soundbite.
Look, there is no federal solution. This gets solved at a state level.
So there's no federal solution. So if there's no federal solution, why do we have federal vaccine mandates?
Yeah, right? Why is he going to the Supreme Court on January 10th for a hearing?
Why do we have Dr. Fauci telling us that now we can't celebrate New Year's Eve either? Why do we have Fauci saying we need vaccine mandates to get on airplanes? If there's no federal solution, then why are they proposing? Maybe it's the key word there. We only have federal screw-ups. He's like, there's no federal solution, but we have plenty of federal screw-ups, and we're going to continue to propose all of that to try to torture you as much as we can. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And then here's something else too I want to ask you guys. So two weeks ago, no one thought about getting tested for Omicron, right? It was kind of just coming out. And it seems to be not very more like a cold, right? But there were no lines, right? They weren't flooding the center. So all of a sudden the national media starts hyping, we need to test. We need to test. Why did the Biden administration drop the ball on tests? Like what? I mean, Jen Psaki, I actually agree with her. She's like, why do we want to send everyone at home their own personal test? What would we do with that? Right. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh no, now we're doing that.
That's a good idea.
Well, it is a good, well, but I mean, 2 weeks ago, it wasn't a good idea. Yeah, now they're doing it. And now people are lining up like for hours to get a COVID test, which is completely stupid, in my opinion, because it's only good for like, you could drive away and, you know, the person behind you in line had, you know, COVID and cough. I mean, well, I guess you couldn't get it that way, but you know what I mean? You could go to the grocery store on your way home and get it. I mean, you could get COVID any number of ways. So why would you want to wait in line for a test that's only good and it's a snapshot, that particular moment? So you do or don't have, I mean, it's just.
And a lot of people in that line are afraid they do have COVID, and there's probably some reason why they believe they have COVID. So the chances are, I don't know how quickly tests are, but if you didn't have it, but while waiting in the line, you got it, that'd be the ultimate irony.
Well, yeah. And it's just like, and what you're going to do, and I think, and I don't know, and if anybody, I mean, I'm asking seriously, why do you think all of these people are staying in line? Now, this is part of my theory, because they all want to be able to apply for a 10. I mean, you know, if you have Omicron, which isn't very bad, particularly if you're asymptomatic, but you test positive. And we all know, as we've talked about before on this show, these tests, a lot of false positives, right? Now you get to stay home for 10 days, right? And then if your husband gets it, well, maybe now you have to stay home because he might give it back to you again, apparently. I mean, it's ridiculous. You can stay home forever. I think there's that, but I think it's the new panic porn. It's not deaths, not hospitalizations, it's cases. Mark my words. They're going to try to use, they want everyone to be taking the test every 5 minutes and then telling all their neighbors that they have it. And here's the thing, because there's no government database, we can't tell. So if you're the media, you can just now make up the number of positive cases, right?
Well, just go to CNN or MSNBC. It's all on the coronavirus. Not all, but without Trump, they have nothing. So the only thing they can go to is coronavirus. And it's you know, and Fauci's never going away. That guy is never going away. You know, Scott Atlas's book, which you had a discussion on the show while I was
with
here.
Mark Griffith, so right.
Yeah, it's hit number one on Amazon nonfiction. So.
Well, but again, I think we got to be careful. It's like the media, I think, for a number of reasons. Number one, because I kind of get the sense, let me back up. I kind of get the sense the Biden administration is trying to figure out how to, you know, disengage from this whole COVID thing. Polis did a great job. They should just do what Polis did. He's like, the emergency's over. Emergency's over.
Well, what do you think he was doing there? Except he wasn't quite as adept. He was saying, there's no federal solution. Then why are you doing anything?
And
he's saying, it's just open to local states. So that's a poll. I mean, we're all 75% of people in Colorado are on some type of mask mandate. 75%.
Which is supposed to end next week, right?
No,
that's all. Raise your hand if you think they're ever going to let us stop wearing masks.
Right.
But I think the Biden administration is trying to disengage from this. Yeah. But the media doesn't want to because they love this. It goes back to the old, and I saw a good analysis, the old, if it bleeds, it leads, right? Panic porn is clickbait, like literally to them, right? And that's what they want. Their ratings are down. People are not sharing nearly as much about COVID. I read something that would say before, like an average COVID post would like literally get like 1,000 shares on social media. Now it gets like less than 100. I mean, it's ridiculous. The drop there, people just don't care. And the media needs to do something to make them care because they don't have Trump to kick around anymore. There's nothing else. The economy's bad, but they don't want to talk about that because they don't want to blame Biden. So they're going to do everything they can do to continue to hype COVID. They're going to create this new panic porn over cases, not deaths, not hospitalizations, but case numbers. They're going to make you go, and then they're going to do stories about how now that they've scared everybody to go get a test, the lines are too long. We don't have enough tests. So, oh my God, if I want to get a test, where am I going to get the test? You forget the fact that you're stupid, that you're even there in the first place. And then they're going to keep ramping that up. And it'll be interesting to see. I don't think it's going to work. Well, then they're going to censor.
It's clearly not working because a large portion of Biden's incredibly poor approval ratings has to do with COVID. He was supposed to come in and, as he said, eliminate COVID. And he has. And now he's been in office over a year and it's just as bad as it ever was.
Exactly. Why are all the sports figures dropping dead from Jacob? Steve just said they changed the isolation to 5 days. Right. Because so let's say if COVID, if we're all going to die from COVID, I would say, well, let's have a little bit longer isolation.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But if you can just willy nilly say, okay, 5 days.
Yeah,
right. And then
hours.
All of a sudden they're making it up as they go, which we all know, which means don't pay any attention to it. Right. And then like from Steve, what about the U.S. as Milwaukee sailors being 100% fully vaccinated, but quarantined in part because of COVID. Safe and effective, repeat after me. Oh, exactly. They're not even trying to say anymore that vaccines work, but they just say you have to get the booster shot.
Which is just another, it's not any different than the other shot you got. It's just another dose of the same thing.
So here's either you're contagious after 5 days or you're not contagious after 5 days. So if you're contagious after 5 days, if you're not, why were we quarantining for 10 days?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's just so don't buy any of it.
And don't buy a thing.
Don't buy any of it. And as that guy said, let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon.
That's what I think is going on. And the fact that people are out there standing up for their rights and people are out there saying not wearing a mask, not going to get my 80th booster shot. But if I can stay home sick on COVID, I'll do that. Absolutely. So, you know, they're going to, they're disrupting the airlines. Can you imagine this? The airlines are all screwed up and the flights are all screwed up over the holiday season because of the stupid quarantine rules, right? And now Fauci is saying, oh, everyone has to be vaccinated to ride an airplane. That's going to go over really well, too.
Whatever Fauci says, I'm for.
That's right.
All right, everybody. So good to see you. We'll have Ted Trimper on Friday, which will be fun. Get his view of everything. And
he's a Democrat strategist.
Democratic strategist. He knows all things Democratic. And Wednesday, we'll have a great show, too. So have a good post-Christmas.
There we go. We'll see you later. Thank you, everybody. Thanks to Maureen, TJ, everybody on Zoom, and we'll see you later.